Good morning from 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. And welcome to our election special candidates forum. As each Saturday this month, we speak to one candidate running for local or state office. The program is brought to you with support from Rebecca's Natural Food and Hamilton's at First and Main. Now here are your hosts, Bob McAdams and Jeff Leonard.
Good Saturday morning, Charlottesville, Virginia. I'm Jeff Leonard, General Manager of WPVC.
And I'm Bob McAdams, Special Events Coordinator at WPVC.
Today we're co-hosting a WPVC election special, one of our interviews with Democratic candidates to represent the 17th District in the State Senate. WPVC does not endorse any candidate for public office. However, we do provide this information to you, our listeners, to help you choose the best candidate for you.
With us in the studio this morning is State Senate candidate Amy Laufer. Amy, welcome to WPVC.
Thanks for having me here, Bob and Jeff.
All right.
Amy, let's start by learning a little bit about you. Where were you born and what was your life like as you were growing up?
Sure. So I was born in a very small town called Mount Calvary, Wisconsin, which is population 786, I believe. I grew up on a dairy farm. I'm one of eight children. So as you can imagine, it was pretty chaotic in our household. Getting chores done was of paramount concern to my parents. but it was great. I mean, I did a lot of, milking cows, feeding pigs and chickens. And I was also active. I was actually I was on the dance squad in high school. Which is kind of funny if you think of me now, but it was really fun. And I eventually became the captain of the dance squad and I went to college. I was first generation college graduate. My parents did not attend college. So I think it was a really proud moment for them to see their children go on to secondary school.
What about that education and what about your work background? And how has it prepared you to serve in the state Senate?
Sure. So actually during college, I will say it took me 6 years to graduate because I fully funded my education. I actually packed fish in Alaska for 3 summers to pay for my education. I have a degree in geology. I did water chemistry for a couple of years for the state of Wisconsin. And then I eventually went into the Peace Corps. It was my passion at the time. I ended up in an elementary school outside of Kingston, Jamaica. And my number one takeaway from that experience was that education is the foundation of a successful society. So when I came back, I got my master's in education. And my first job in Virginia was teaching middle school math and science in Louisa County. So I did that for many years until my child was born with special medical needs. And I stopped working, but I was appointed to the Commission on Children and Families in Albemarle County to represent families with children with special needs. And that really opened my eyes to all the programs that are available to families that need support. While I was doing that, I was also asked to run for Charlottesville City School Board. So I ran and was elected twice to the school board, and I was eventually vice chair and chair. I'm proud of all the work we've done there. Of course, there's more to do, but I feel that my experience growing up in a rural community, raising a child with special needs, teaching in our public schools, and advocating for our schools on the school board, that's the kind of experience I want to bring to the state Senate.
Now, Amy, you're running to be senator from the 17th District. What area does that 17th District include?
So it's actually 6 different municipalities. It is Eastern Albemarle, parts of Culpeper, all of Orange County, most of Louisa County, and then half of Spotsylvania County, and then all of Fredericksburg. So you can see it's very diverse. We have many rural communities, many urban centers, but I think we all deserve better representation in Richmond.
It sounds like an example of gerrymandering.
Yeah, it absolutely is an example of gerrymandering. I think there's 3 precincts, taken out in Louisa, but 3 precincts put in Culpeper. So, yes, it's really a mishmash.
So you're listening to 94.7 WPVC 17th District Senate Candidate Forum. I'm Jeff Leonard. With us in studio today is Amy Laufer. Amy, you were mentioning your time on the Charlottesville School Board. So how else have you been active in recent years to help improve life for those of us in Central Virginia?
So actually, while I was on the school board and advocating in Richmond, it became very apparent that there was not many women representing us in Richmond. So I took it upon myself to found an organization called Virginia's List. We support Democratic women running for state office. I've done that. I've founded that 5 years ago. So we've been very active in helping women get elected to state office. And I can proudly say that we supported the 11 women that were elected into the House of Delegates. And the organization is still going. We have, 12-member board that is across the state. So, I'm really proud of that.
What could possibly go wrong with a bunch of men sitting in positions of power, especially sitting over women's issues? But we'll probably talk more about that later. You know, running for the state Senate is a big deal. It takes a lot of sacrifice. And I know you. You and I are friendly. You have three children. Why did you decide to run now? Not that children are going to get in the way, but you have a lot of commitments, and this is an additional one. What made you choose now, and what made you choose the state Senate?
You know, I think there's a many aspects to that answer, honestly. But the truth is, I'm just really tired of being represented by people that voted against the Equal Rights Amendment, are now trying to ban abortion and, deny climate change. We need and we deserve better representation. And I feel like my experience will be, very useful in not only campaigning, but also legislating. So I felt that this was the moment that I could be most effective.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's 17th District State Senate Candidate Forum. I'm Bob McAdams, and with us in the studio today is Amy Laufer. Amy, the Unite the Right rally on August 11th and 12th of 2017, well, it traumatized the communities in and around Charlottesville. During the lead-up to that rally, especially during the month after the July 8th KKK rally, Charlottesville City Council struggled to deal with the permit request from the Unite the Right rally. Now, if some group requested a permit for a potentially violent event, any municipality in Virginia could face a similar dilemma. They've got to choose between free speech and public safety. What should the state government do to support municipalities caught in that dilemma?
Well, as you all know, I, was there on August 11th and 12th, and, I was running for city council, so I was very, I was very trying to see how we could have been better suited to handle that situation. And there are many communities, actually, in Virginia that have permitting processes that could have prevented this, and the state government has allowed them those permitting processes, such as in Alexandria, Arlington, and we need our state government to allow all communities to make the determination if this is free speech or if this is actually, what ended up being an extremely violent and public safety. Well, we know the fatality and all the injuries that occurred. The state government really needs to allow localities the right to prohibit things that are public safety.
So that would include weapons. I mean, they have the authority to ban knives and every other change, anything else that could be used, except not firearms. So that would be one thing that you would have them do, or let the state give the municipalities power to ban those firearms.
Yes, in a rally situation, absolutely. I was there, and anybody that was in in Charlottesville that day can tell you it was a terrifying experience. And people do not have the right to do that, I believe. That was a terrifying situation. And, yes, the state government should be allowing municipalities to make those determinations.
Now, those events in Charlottesville on August 11th and 12th, they showed the overt racism of white supremacists. The Southern Poverty Law Center reports a rapid increase in the number of hate groups over the past 2 years. How should the General Assembly respond to the overt racism of white supremacy?
Yes, I was, of course, at the rally. And, you know, I really believe our elected officials and our community leaders need to be the trendsetters and supporting all of our communities and standing up and telling our communities of color that we are supportive of them and that we do not espouse this rhetoric. And that is the role of elected officials. 20% of this district is African American, and they need to feel supported by the people that are representing them.
Now, the events of July and August 2017 also uncovered covert racism that's been embedded in our institutions for many years. Now, more than a year and a half has gone by since the August events. Where do you think we are now in race relations in Central Virginia, and where are we headed? And where do you think we are now in race relations in Virginia as a whole? And where are we headed?
Well, I think we've had a couple very difficult setbacks, you know, in the past year. I do believe, though, we are making many attempts. There's so many groups that are working together that were not working together before. And I'm an eternal optimist. So I will say we need to be continuing our efforts. We need to double down on them. Our elected officials need to be supportive of all communities and be supporting the efforts of bringing more diverse people together. And we need to be the trendsetters and provide that welcoming community that we want to see for everybody. So I'm optimistic, and we have a long way to go, but we just need to double down our efforts and keep working at it.
Prejudice comes in many forms. Women still earn less than men for doing the same work, and members of the LGBTQ community can be fired without cause simply for being who they are. What should our state government do to overcome these injustices?
Well, as we saw this year with the Equal Rights Amendment, the majority of people in Virginia, 81% of them, agreed with the Equal Rights Amendment. And because the Republicans had control of both the House and the Senate, they were capable of killing the bills in committee rather than having a floor vote. So, and we also know with the bill for, non-discrimination based on sexual orientation, that was also, again, killed in committee. These are things that overwhelmingly people agree with. And we still have elected officials that are not representing us properly. So if 81% of the population wanted the Equal Rights Amendment, how can it be that our elected officials did not do the will of the people? So how should the state government overcome these injustices? We need to be supporting what the will of the people is. So
I think I have an answer. How can they do it? It's because they're jerks and treat women as second-class citizens. But that's a topic for a second interview, perhaps. You know, let's talk about guns. The white supremacists in Charlottesville in August 2017 came armed with handguns and assault rifles. Fortunately, only one handgun was fired that day. But gun violence takes the lives of Virginians every day. And it seems like every day we turn the television on, we get another school shooting. How do you assess the problem of gun violence, and what laws do you believe the General Assembly should enact to this epidemic?
So, as I said, I grew up in a very rural community. You know, my whole family hunts. I have deer meat in my fridge. That is a culture. It's how you feed your family. But no hunter wants a child to be afraid to go to school or go to a movie theater or go to the mall. And we need to separate the ideas of, people supporting their family by hunting to these mass shootings. And as we see, I will tell you, my own children are very concerned. What my son said to me, I'm afraid we won't all fit behind the teacher's desk. My daughter has told me that when someone has, is upset at school, she's afraid of what could happen the next day. We have generations of children that are terrified. And if we have elected officials that are denying that that is the truth, they should not be there. Many of these crimes are perpetrated by people that have bought guns legally, but then the guns have been taken and used to perpetrate the crime. We need to hold gun owners responsible. They need to be storing their guns safely. I have been very supportive of Moms Demand Action. Their whole premise is that we need to educate the public on how to be safe around guns. As a school board member, we welcome them in. They brought their curriculum. They're teaching it in our high schools. We need, in my opinion, if you're going to own a gun, you need a safe. You need to be taught how to store it safely. And then if your gun is used in a crime, you need to be held responsible for that.
I really enjoy Moms Demand Action. They have a great Facebook presence, and what they do is phenomenal. Well, Amy, this is a great discussion. We need to take a short break. I'll be right back. And we're back. I'm Jeff Leonard. I'm co-hosting with Bob McAdams, 94.7 WPVC Election Special Interview with 17th District Senate candidate Amy Laufer. Bob and Amy, we're talking about the issues, but Amy, you want to follow up on that one last question about gun violence.
Sure. So I absolutely support universal background checks. We need to have that for every sale. And beyond that, though, there's something called the red flag laws, which allows family members to petition the local law enforcement to for people that are in crisis, that we remove the guns from their house so that they cannot be in danger of themselves or are hurting others. So those are things we absolutely should be allowing our localities to do. And the state government should be supportive of those issues.
And we've got lots of other issues, Amy, and they don't get any easier. Having health care available in a time of need, it's a necessity for all the people in our area. Lowering the high cost of health insurance is another need for many people in the 17th District. What efforts by state government to address these real concerns do you support, and what further actions are needed?
Well, I think the expansion of Medicaid was absolutely necessary, but it also came with restrictions, as many of you know. So if you're not working, you're not Medicaid eligible, which means our most sick people cannot get insurance. So I think the first thing we need to do is do away with that restriction. Because, of course, if they have, maybe if they can have medical care, they could actually go to work. So first we have to do that. But then the thing we see, especially in Albemarle, is the lack of competition with insurance companies. We have two providers, and that means the price is set by them. I think we have to allow for more competition. I also think that if people are many people are working several different jobs. Right. They're consulting part time. They're Uber driving. They're renting out their house for Airbnb. So we're kind of in this economy where it's very transitional for many people. We should allow them to buy a Medicaid plan if that would be the most affordable plan for them. So those are the things I think we need to be working towards.
Now, accessing health care is a challenge for many Virginians, but getting care for mental illness is even more of a challenge. Limits to insurance coverage and the lack of professionals in the field mean that many people with mental health problems, they just go untreated. What should the state do to help people with mental illness?
Right. I think it absolutely should be covered by insurance companies. First of all, it should be part of the policy. But beyond that, actually, much of the district is very rural. So access to mental health care, but also just care in general, is a real burden. Many people have to drive 1 hour or 2 hours to get to, any kind of hospital or doctor's office. And in my opinion, how can we expand access to mental health and just health care in general is broadband. We need our state government to take seriously that 20 to 25% of the district does not have broadband access, and they could be having telemedicine. You know, I have a child with special needs and special medical issues. I use telemedicine. If I can't see the doctor, I can call in on Skype or FaceTime, and we can have a discussion without me driving in and waiting for hours for the doctor appointment. This is a way that we can expand access to care.
You know, my family just entered into that telemedicine thing the other day, and that was pretty impressive. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, 17th Senate Candidate Forum. I'm Jeff Leonard. With us in the studio today is Amy Laufer. Amy, let's continue on mental illness. It leads to our criminal justice system. The superintendent of the Albemarle Charlottesville Regional Jail estimates that 50% of the people in jail suffer from some form of mental illness, and 80% have substance abuse problems. Other jails and prisons in Virginia have the same problems. What changes in our criminal justice system are needed for the General Assembly to address this reality?
Yes, that's a real concern. Many people, as you've given the statistics on how many people are actually in prison that suffer from mental health, and this is not a place to receive mental health care. We know that. Our courts need to use diversion programs more effectively and efficiently. We can be using mental health court and drug court to reduce the amount of people in jail. We also need to do away with mandatory minimums. And we know, of course, many people in jail actually have not been convicted of a crime. They can't post bail. We need real bail reform. People should not be in prison because they can't afford a fine. So there's many things we can be doing with our criminal justice system to, mass incarceration breaks apart families. It ruins lives. It's draining our economy, and we need to get real about solving it.
Statistics reveal another issue of the criminal justice system, and that's systemic racism. From the police stops to prosecutors to incarceration, whites have a clear advantage over people of color. What should the General Assembly do to make sure all Virginians can trust that justice is equally administered by police officers, prosecuting attorneys, judges, probation officers, and prison staff?
Well, it's without a doubt this is happening. I mean, the statistics speak for themselves. We absolutely need to have better training programs for all of our law enforcement, judges, probation officers, prison staff. I think it goes beyond that, quite frankly. Families should not have to tell their children how to act around a police officer if they're a person of color as different as a white citizen. And that's the reality that we're facing right now, and it's not okay. We need better bias training, and I think a lot of the programs that we've set up that are effective are not being utilized, like the diversion programs I talked about, and over-criminalizing, and overcharging people with these minimum sentences. We have to do away with these things.
Where do you come down on marijuana legalization?
I do have a child with epilepsy, and I cannot imagine if the only way that he could control his seizures was with medical marijuana, and I lived in a state that didn't allow that. And that is the truth for many of the people that live in Virginia. We have allowed for medical marijuana use, but the quantities are so low, many people actually do not see benefit. And we need elected officials that take this seriously. And in terms of medical use, we need to allow people to get the care they need. And in terms of, possibly growing our economy in our rural areas, we see other states have legalized marijuana, and they haven't seen the deterious effects that they were, telling us they'd see. I think it's something we should take seriously. We have seen what, allowing more vineyards in our counties has done to the economy in some of our communities that were really struggling. This might be the next step,
Great.
Yeah.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's 17th District State Senate Candidate Forum. I'm Bob McAdams. Amy, the New York Times ProPublica report on the achievement gap between the races in Charlottesville and Albemarle. Well, it's alarmed educators, students, parents, residents, everybody. Both school boards and everybody in the school divisions have tried to address this problem. I mean, you've been on the school board.
Mm-hmm.
The same problem exists in other school divisions throughout the 17th district. What role does the state government have in this problem, and what should the General Assembly do to address it?
Yes, so I can say, yes, I was on the school board for 7 years. Part of what I did was help us to get the right data so that we can actually try to solve this issue. This isn't just Charlottesville, Albemarle. This is our whole country is struggling with this. I think something that I would be recommending is universal preschool. Many children come to us behind. It's very hard to help them catch up. I myself was a Head Start student. I know what a leg up that can do. And not only can it help children, but it also helps our families because, as you know, daycare is so exorbitant, and the quality of daycare is so widespread. Having universal preschool, I believe, can give everybody the help they need to succeed. I would also say that our curriculum, you know, needs an overvamp in terms of especially history and civics. We need to allow for history to be more holistic. I know when I grew up, you know, you get these same stories every year and it's not the whole picture. And I think that is what really has come to real fruition throughout these discussions. And, also I would say we need more pathways for kids to be successful, especially in high school. We need more vocational training. We need to be allowing kids to graduate with certificates to go straight into the workforce for any number of skilled trades, but also for technology. I think having a more holistic look in terms of history and also providing preschool and different pathways can help everyone be successful.
Now, the recently released housing needs assessment for Planning District 10, which is part of Central Virginia, shows that many people in the area struggle to afford a place to live. Many groups are calling for more affordable housing, and that brings up related concerns about racial disparities in home ownership, gentrification in urban areas that forces people out of their homes, and substandard rural homes. What role does the state have in efforts to increase the availability of affordable housing?
Well, I think some of you may have seen that Governor Northam had a suggested budget to support grants to localities for affordable housing, and that full request was denied, actually, and he only received a portion of that. I think that is the role of state government, is to provide grants to communities to provide affordable housing opportunities. I also think that, we do have something called the VDHA, which is the Virginia Department of Housing Authority. They provide loans to people that are building affordable housing projects. We need to allow more access to that mechanism. And I also think we can't ignore the fact that the minimum wage has not increased in over a decade. So, you know, affordable housing is absolutely an issue, but also the fact that people are not making a living wage causes that to even be a more difficult problem.
Well, you're right. Higher pay would make housing and everything else more affordable. You know, Virginia has a minimum hourly wage of $7.25. A bill to increase the minimum wage in stages to $15 an hour failed at the Senate this year. The most recent Orange Dot report showed that a great number of people in Central Virginia, including those in Louisa and Albemarle, who cannot afford to pay for basic needs. What should the state do to address income inequalities to bring wages up to a livable level?
Well, actually, when you look through, so this district is six municipalities, and there is there's actually a tool to tell you what is the minimum wage for each of the localities, because it is different. You know, Albemarle County is a bit higher than, say, Orange County. So I think looking at a livable wage regionally, I think is something, and having a goal set by the state that regionally we are going to increase living wage. I think that is something we have to do. And people that don't like the idea of raising minimum wage don't understand that we are paying for this in so many different ways. Because if somebody doesn't feel secure in their living situation, you know, they will be sicker. They will not be able to work as effectively. So, you know, we're paying for a non-living wage in so many other ways than actually just if we would increase living wage, people would be more secure. They'd be more productive.
You know, when I worked for the state of Virginia, we would hire sometimes new officers. They would come in at about $35,000 a year. And if they had a family, they had a couple kids, they would oftentimes work for the state full time with full benefits and be on food stamps. So you are correct that they are supplementing, there is a backstop of food stamps with, you know, for those of us who seem not be able to make it. I think one of the 57th district candidates was talking about indexing a minimum wage. Is that what you were talking about, sort of indexing it through based on cost of living in each locality?
Yes.
Okay, great.
I guess that's actually maybe better. Indexing, yes.
All right. When people live away from the urban areas in order to find affordable housing, they incur the transportation costs for commutes. What changes do you support to make public transportation a viable alternative to single-occupant car travel for both commuting and interurban travel? Now, I know a lot of this district you represent is very rural, so transportation is on the top of their mind.
Well, actually, when you look at the district itself, there's transportation issues in each region, and they're very different. 60,000 people are commuting on I-95 from Spotsylvania and Fredericksburg every single day. They are starting their commutes at sometimes 4 a.m., or they're going into what's called the slug line, where they're going to carpool together at 4:30 in the morning. So, and then when you look interior to Louisa and Orange, they are 60% of them are commuting usually to either Charlottesville, Richmond, or Fredericksburg. And then when you look in Albemarle, of course, the traffic and transportation issues there are people coming into Charlottesville. And then again, Culpeper is also going into Northern Virginia. So I think we need, it's going to be a variety of things to be addressing. I would say out in Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania, there is a plan for a regional light rail, which would go down into North Carolina. Virginia needs to participate in this. This could relieve traffic in the Fredericksburg region. We also need to look into expanding the VRE, the Virginia Rail Expressway, to down into not just Fredericksburg, but into Spotsylvania, so that people can be commuting by train. And then I would say, when we're looking at Albemarle, we need to, and we've talked about this a lot, having park and rides that are right outside of the Pantops region. And I think that could alleviate a lot of the traffic congestion we see. You know, these are issues that have plagued us for so long, and we need elected officials that are going to commit to working on these issues. So,
you know, speaking for no one but myself, I kind of love the train. I jump on the Amtrak to D.C. and points north every chance I get. Well, thanks, Amy. We need to interrupt this discussion. Take another short break. And we're back. I'm Jeff Leonard, and I'm co-hosting with my friend Bob McAdams the 94.7 WPVC election special interview with 17th District Senate candidate Amy Laufer. Bob and Amy, we have one more segment and a lot of issues to get to.
Now, Amy, recent reports from scientists tell us that the climate change crisis is much worse than previously understood. We've got years, not decades, to act. Young people who understand the urgency of this crisis, they're condemning the lack of action by older people who are in positions of power. This crisis overlays all the other problems we have discussed. What should the state government do to accelerate reduction of greenhouse gas emissions and hasten the transition to renewable energy sources?
Well, I agree with the young people, you know, condemning the lack of action. I graduated college, I think, 20-odd years ago, and I have a degree in science, and this is all we were talking about back then. So, you know, I think it's important to know that we are transitioning into a renewable energy, you know, meeting with industry experts. Wind and solar energy right now is only 10% of the energy produced. But because consumers are demanding renewable energy resources, you know, we are transitioning. I think so. The legislature passed the goal 2 years ago that we would have a third renewable energy by 2030. And we need to double down those efforts. What we do know on other states that have proposed these kind of bills, they have different ways of getting there. You know, the problem that we've seen with our state legislature is that they haven't taken any actions to make this a reality. So what I'm saying is the state government has to give ideas on how this can happen. Otherwise, Dominion will be determining our ecological and economic fate, quite frankly. We need to allow people to produce their own energy and sell it back to the grid unimpeded. Right now, you can have your own solar energy. If you have excess capacity, there's a cap on how much you can be selling back. We need to remove that cap because if we are going to get to a third energy, we need everybody to be doing it. You know, the large solar farms that we see, that's this industrial model, but that's not going to get us to the one third. And I think our real goal eventually should be 100% renewable. You know, we know the weather patterns right now are so chaotic. There's just no denying it anymore that this is happening. The flooding that's occurring, you know, on our coastline, in the interior of the country, this is happening. We need elected officials that believe it and want to make policies to change it. And I am honestly that person.
You know what's amazing is you and I both have freshmen in high school, and when you sit down and talk to them or their friends, they get it. You know, they really get climate change, and they get the issues, and they get, and then, so if you haven't taken the time to talk to a 15-year-old or a 16-year-old, I would encourage you to do so.
I would just say, you know, their whole vision of the world is so completely different than ours. It's really exciting. You know, there is a local organization called 180, which is basically trying to help this new generation really accept their responsibility, not just in energy consumption, but, you know, plastic consumption. And it's a very exciting organization that I hope you guys can look up.
Now, all candidates have these aspirations for problem solving, but they're eventually going to meet the limits of the state budget. How do you think the General Assembly should reconcile the needs for real change with the level of revenue coming from the current taxes? And what new sources of revenue could the state use to meet the needs of the people?
Well, I don't know if you had noticed, but in the paper, you know, in the Richmond Times-Dispatch, there is just another article that we are, you know, higher than projected revenues through our sales tax. You know, a lot of that money ends up going into the rainy day fund. I think we need to re-look at that, revisit that, because the truth is we need to start investing in our people in terms of education, transportation, broadband. If we want to grow our economy, we also need to be investing, you know, and utilizing those funds in that way. I think is something that we need to look at. And, you know, this whole tax cut that we had through the federal government, I mean, you know, that tax cut only went to corporations, quite frankly. And, you know, the state needs to be looking at that, too.
My taxes went up, if that's any consolation. For local governments to meet the needs for our residents, they must have authorization from the General Assembly, either through general laws applicable to all or through special acts for individual local governments. What do you think the relationship between the General Assembly and local governments should be?
Well, I think as a school board member, I can say that a lot of times the state puts on, you know, unfunded mandates to localities and school divisions. So I would say that our elected officials on the state level have to realize the implications of the things they're asking local governments to do, because ultimately what will happen then is the taxes and localities goes up to fund the mandates from the state. I think that happens because only about 10% of people elected to state office actually served locally. You know, I think that needs to happen. And, you know, furthermore, I will say our elected officials on the state level have to be meeting with our elected officials locally to understand the priorities, legislative priorities that they want their elected officials to champion. And I can tell you, you know, that is an area that has been lacking in the 17th district.
What do you think about the Dillon rule?
I think we need to revisit that. I think we need to revisit that. We need to allow localities freedom to make decisions that are right for them. You know, not every location has the same needs, and local officials, you know, need that freedom.
You know, people often feel frustrated with the lack of action by the General Assembly. The governmental system in Virginia seems designed to prevent change. The General Assembly is in session for only 60 days. On even number years, and 45 days on the odd. In that brief time, legislators will continue a few thousand bills, most of which will be killed in subcommittee. How do you plan on getting things done in the General Assembly if elected?
Well, actually, what we've seen this past cycle is that senators were now given a limited amount of bills to present. They can only present 20 bills, which I think was because there's so little time. And when you're looking at thousands of bills, it's hard to know, you know, it's hard to go through all of that. First of all, there's several things, I think. I think the time allotted is very short. So having very clear information from our localities to the state elected official is critical. And then in terms of the subcommittees, you know, a lot of times what happens is the subcommittees will be canceled. People don't know about it. They showed up to come and speak, and now there's no public comment. So I think we need to hold our state elected officials to the schedule that they have set so that they can have public comment during the committee hearings. I also think we need to be making sure that there's notes being taken or live streaming it, because a lot of times people don't know what is happening on the state level. There's a lot of transparency issues that I think the state government needs to work on. But I hope that, you know, I hope that I could work really diligently with my, you know, colleagues at the state level to get as many bills passed as possible.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's 17th District State Senate Forum interview with Amy Laufer. I'm Bob McAdams. Now, Amy, in the June 11th primary, you're running for the Democratic nomination for senator from the 17th District. And this district extends over a wide area from Fredericksburg to Albemarle. How will you engage voters in this June election? And how can voter participation be increased in all elections?
Well, voter participation is critical every single year. And in this year in particular, it is a down year for Virginia. Virginia is a state that has elections every single year. And the only way to do that is knocking doors and talking to voters individually. And my team has been knocking doors almost every day. And in some cases, multiple jurisdictions in multiple days. So that is the number way, one way to increase voter participation.
Now, every campaign needs to pay for the basics to get the candidate's message to as many people as possible. You need signs, mailers, all that other stuff. But at the same time, corporate money and corporate lobbying are seen as preventing government from taking action on real issues facing the people. How will you raise funds to pay for those basics for your campaign? And what do you think should be done about the influence of money in state politics?
That's a great question. I have taken the Activate Virginia Pledge, which states that I will not take Dominion money. But campaign finance reform is really critical in Virginia. There are no minimums for anything in Virginia. So any person could give you as much as they want. Any corporation could give you as much as they want. And I really think our elected officials need to take this on as an issue. We need to have minimums. Even the federal government, if you're running for Congress, there's minimums. You know, there's.
Do you mean minimums or maximums?
Sorry, I mean maximums. Almost every other state has maximums as well. So it's like the Wild Wild West. Yeah, I think we need finance reform.
Are there other places where money is creating undue influence in our state government?
Well, I would say when we're looking at corporations like Dominion, they are regulated by the state government and they're mandated to have a profit. And then they can lobby the government, the state officials who are regulating them. By the way, that is illegal in every other state. So, yes, these are issues that we need to take on. This should not be legal in Virginia.
It's just the beginning of the questionable practices. So, Amy, I'd be remiss if I did not ask you your thoughts, and I'm going to hide over here just because I'm fearful that you might start throwing stuff. What is going on in Alabama? Tell us your thoughts.
Well, Alabama just passed a ban on abortion, even in instances of incest and rape. And we have a delegate named Bob Thomas, who actually is in the Fredericksburg region, which is in this district, said that this is the number one issue for the Republicans. If they get the majority, this is the kind of ban that they're going to put in Virginia. I want to tell my story of I was pregnant with my third child. We went in at 20 weeks and we were joking about, hey, let's find out what we're having this time. This will be exciting. And when the nurse came in for the examination, she got very serious and she left to get the doctor. He came in to tell us that I had a high-risk pregnancy, and in days past, this kind of pregnancy would have resulted in either the death of the mother or the death of the child. It's called placenta previa. He told me within the last month or two that I was probably going to be hospitalized, you know, in a serious situation of, you know, bleeding that was uncontrollable. And he was absolutely right. I went into the hospital 8 weeks out, and, you know, they immediately kept me there for observation for 3 days. I was, I went back home. And within 5 days, I was back again, and this time it was an emergency C-section. I have never been so terrified in my life. I had just left my two children having a little snack in their little table, and in that hospital room, I thought, these might be the last things I see. These four walls in this hospital room may be the last thing I see, or I am not going to bring home the baby I thought I was going to bring home to their brother and sister. And these are the real challenges that women are facing. This is a healthcare issue. I cannot imagine if my doctor had walked in the room to tell me that he could not do what he needed to do because there was some law preventing him. Abortion is a healthcare issue, and it is up to the doctor and the family involved. I do believe that they are bringing this up because they have not done what they need. The Republicans have not helped with education, healthcare, transportation, broadband. These are the issues that people care about. So their tactic is going to be to distract us with this issue because they don't want to solve the real pressing issues of people's day-to-day lives. And I also believe it's an effort to keep women as second-class citizens. When we see that 81% of Virginians wanted the Equal Rights Amendment to pass and they refused to do so, the only thing we can attribute this to is they do not want us to be equal citizens. And the only way women are going to have protections is if we have protections in the Constitution. And if states can start banning things that the Supreme Court has ruled legal, what is to prevent them from doing other laws? You know, this is a very dangerous situation that we are in. I hope every Virginian is paying attention and is going to come out and vote this year because we cannot allow this to happen in our state.
Thank you for that, Amy. And here's another question. If you're elected, what would be your three highest priorities to accomplish in the state Senate?
Well, I think I'm going to have to make sure we don't have an abortion ban, which was not the first thing I was thinking of. But I also want to champion universal preschool. We know this is a way to help children succeed and help families be successful. I absolutely want to expand broadband access. If children and families cannot access the internet, they're on a cliff. I mean, we have children that are sitting in parking lots in the evening of locked buildings to do their homework. We have people that can't run businesses out of their own homes. We have people that can't access health care. Broadband can help us with all of that. And then I would just say the environment is something I'm very passionate about. We need to make sure our state government is allowing for renewable energy and, making sure that we are doing all we can on climate change.
You know, what people, I don't think people realize who don't have children or young children is daycare is like $300 a week per child. You do get a discount for a second child down to $250, but holy cow. So the June 11th primary is coming up quickly. To get elected, you have to win the support of many voters in the 17th district. Let's say you knock on my door or run into me at a cocktail party. How do you describe your campaign in the one or two moments that you have to try to convince me to vote for you? What's your elevator speech?
I want to take my experience growing up in a rural community, raising a child with special needs, teaching in public schools, and advocating as a school board member to the state Senate. We need change in Richmond. We need a voice in Richmond. And my campaign is building momentum. This is the top of the ticket this year. We know this is the year of lowest turnout. We need a candidate that's going to excite people to volunteer and donate and vote at levels like of a congressional district or a congressional campaign. And I'm telling you, I am building that momentum. I had a very strong first quarter finance report, and Bryce Reeves began attacking me, saying that I was this liberal. I am an infanticide person coming into Senate District 17. We need a campaign that is going to be strong, motivating other volunteers. I have a professional staff. We are going door knocking every day. We are doing multiple canvas kickoffs in multiple jurisdictions in the weekends. That's what's going to make it happen this year. Like, we need every voter to turn out this year.
You know, Bryce Reeves, Senator Reeves, is not scared to be nasty. I've been following some of his campaigns previously. What do you do when you're attacked? What do you do when the nasties come?
Well, I share it with my supporters to tell them this is what we are facing. And it doesn't need to be like this. You know, even just one person to change the culture, that's what you need. You know, and all that rhetoric they're espousing, the only reason they're doing that is because they haven't done their job. If we had better public schools, if we had better transportation, if we had better broadband, that's what they'd be talking about. But because they have not done their jobs, they're going to get nasty. They're going to, and you know, you just have to stay above it.
So what's the best way for people to get in touch with your campaign, to learn more about you, volunteer, and possibly donate?
So you can go to my website, lawfor4virginia. That's L-A-U-F like Frank, E-R-F-O-R, and Virginia spelled out. And I would love to have you guys come out and campaign with us and, you know, knock doors. We're going out every weekend. We're doing phone banks almost every night. So please get a hold of us.
All right. So it looks like we've got 2 minutes left. Bob, I think you have one more question.
Yeah. When I think about this spring primary, voting is not on anybody's mind. And there are efforts made by certain officials to keep people from thinking about voting. How can you really get people engaged in voting and make sure everybody is able to vote?
Well, I think it's shows like this help get the word out. But I mean, I think a lot of our system is designed to suppress voters. Having a June primary, as you said, you know, it's off of everybody's mind. This is why Virginia has elections every year. We know the voter turnout is low on off year. And I think there's so many ways we suppress votes. I would first of all say having election days on a Tuesday automatically, you know, eliminates people that can't get to their precinct. And, you know, making early voting, we shouldn't need a reason to vote early. We should want everybody to vote early. I can tell you when I moved here, I was volunteering to take people to the polls, even though I had 3 car seats in my car. And I tried to vote early because I was afraid the kids would be sleeping or I'd be driving somebody. And when I saw the form and it said, why are you voting early? I couldn't believe they needed a reason. You know, we need to have early voting without cause. We need to be allowing people to have their rights restored after they have been convicted. That should be automatic. Currently, it's a 2-step process. First, you have to apply to get your rights restored, and then you actually have to register. We also should be automatic registration when you turn 18. I would even go so far as to say, like, having a class, having the teachers take you to your precinct to make it normalized and to give you that experience. And also, I would say the fact that the, you know, some of these precincts, when you look at where they're located, they're too difficult to get to for most places, especially in these rural districts. You see many times that the precincts are all located in the same area, even though they're different coming in from different areas. we need to have more centralized precincts. And there's just so much more that we could be doing. You know, honestly, some countries in Europe actually have online voting, and it ends at midnight on a certain day. You know, this could be a way that we could get around having to go to the polls. So, you know, but my job for the June 11th primary is to get out and knock doors and make sure that everybody turns out. And thank you guys so much for this opportunity.
Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time. Amy, thank you for spending this hour with our WPVC listeners. Remember, this is one in our series of election special interviews with candidates in our area seeking the nomination for city councilor, county supervisor, delegate, and state senator in the June 11th primary. Each interview is available on podcast from our website, 947wpvc.org. We thank Amy Laufer and all the candidates for giving us their time so that you, our listeners, can make the best choice for nominees. Now it's up to you to cast your vote on June 11th. Thanks for listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
You've been listening to the 94.7 WPVC Election Special Candidates Forum. The program is brought to you with support from Rebecca's Natural Food and Hamilton's at First and Main. Join us again next Saturday at 11 as we talk to yet another candidate for local office in Virginia's 2019 off-year elections. You can hear this program again or suggest questions for upcoming guests at 947wpvc.org or link to it through our Facebook page. Thanks for listening.